Here's therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's a well-rested and refreshed Chris and Dave, both of us having taken our naps late on a Sunday evening, as we're going to talk about the Packers' overtime come-from-behind victory against the Cincinnati Bengals. Dave, I got to ask you, exactly how high do you think Mason Crosby was when he hit that winning field goal?
He must have been very high, because I think that stadium was high. I think the whole state of Wisconsin was pretty high, because it was looking like a pretty ugly day for Wisconsin sports fans.
Oh, man, terrible.
Bad. I know we go into other sports, but the Badgers didn't play, so we didn't have a good game or anything to cheer for on Saturday. And the Brewers lost 3 out of 4 to the Cubs.
Terrible.
And then the Packers come out and just look like a team that's been bad from 2015, I guess. They kind of look with no defense and no real idea what they want to do on offense for at least a half. And I went from 2 weeks ago thinking this is a Super Bowl team to actually thinking in my mind this team may not win another game. I just completely did a 180. It was very frustrated.
You know, it's got to be, though. And as I'm watching this game and watching them essentially, you know, step on their privates there, I'm wondering if not having, you know, a healthy offensive line is probably a pretty important thing in the NFL. You know, you got to have guys up front. And God bless Kyle Murphy. He's not quite ready to be the starting left tackle. What do you say?
No, that's right. He's not very good at all. And for a long time, there was pretty obvious that they were going to give him help, but they didn't for a while. And then later in the game, I thought they left him alone as well. I think they – and I don't really know how you play it, because on the one hand, you say, look, just get in front of your guy as quickly as possible, and Aaron will create his own space. Or do you give him help and you have one less guy out in the pass play?
When they do that, when he does get in the way, the guy just knocks him down.
Yeah.
And all that doesn't really help to get in his way if you're just going to, you know, be a slight impediment. You know, I guess I should give him a little break. I mean, this guy has played, what, a grand total of coming to this game, 2 NFL games, and he's being asked to go up against some pretty good guys. Maybe I'm being unrealistic, but they just looked out of sync, and I think a lot of it was because – you know, you're playing with Brian Bulaga. The right tackle was coming back from an injury. They had to remove him. You know, you need, I think, an offensive line who's going to be able to spring the run, but also to give Aaron enough time. The guy took 6 sacks today. No wonder they struggle out of the gate.
And it wasn't sacks where he's running around and they get sacked. They were quick sacks.
Right,
exactly. You know, 2 seconds and there's a guy right in front of him. And I don't understand, you know, they never really went to an offense where they got the ball out quickly like they did against Seattle. I thought there was, I mean, they must have trusted that Murphy was going to hang in there and block his guy. That clearly was not happening. And I thought the adjustment really took a slow time to show up. Finally, they moved the pocket in the second half a bit. I think that really helped. And they started to chip. And I will say before we go further, Chris, that I felt I was kind of in touch with the game a lot more because Tony Romo is a great announcer. Isn't he excellent?
He's one of your homeboys.
He is. He grew up not too far from where I grew up. That's right.
Except you're like your old – you don't have to be his dad, though, right? I mean, pretty much.
No, I don't know about that.
That's me that's old enough to be his dad.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I'm old enough to be his older brother, for sure.
Okay.
Wasn't he on it? I mean, he could tell you what was happening, what plays were going to happen before they were snapped. He would call out the quarterback and making bad calls. It made me think, like, why aren't other announcers that good? I mean, I don't know if I've ever heard an announcer as good as him.
Well, now, I know you have, you know, Burlington eyes and, you know, southeastern Wisconsin affections. I get that. But I think it was his boyish enthusiasm. I mean, the guy does have that, gosh, golly, shucks, I'm really into it kind of thing. And it's compelling. But if you break down what he was saying, you know, sometimes he would say, it's this way and that way. Well, of course it isn't. You know, I mean.
Well, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. You know, I think he's interesting to listen to. He's fun. He's not as cool and detached as Troy Aikman, who's taken a lot of concussions over time.
Yeah.
And so it's just it's just nice to hear somebody, you know, fresh. I could do without Jim Nance. I love listening to Jim Nance do the Masters. Not crazy about his football call.
Yeah, but I thought with Romo, I mean, there are a few times where he's pointing out, you know, things that are part of the game that are really interesting to watch. I mean, he certainly was on the tackles and was paying attention to how Green Bay was kind of playing with really poor play by their tackles. Andy Dalton,
well,
you know, he...
Well, anybody could see that. I mean, your dog probably saw that.
Yeah, but, you know, but a lot of times they don't point it out at all. I mean, they... that's true. My cat would have pointed it out, yeah.
Yeah, and your cat would have been better with the Telestrator, too. Tony had a little trouble with the Telestrator.
So you're not going to give him any props? You didn't think, you thought Romo was
that? He's a good Wisconsin guy. You know, I like him. I always defended him when people got down on him with the Cowboys. I liked his enthusiasm, but I don't know that the substance of his commentary was great.
Oh, I think you're alone on that. I just looked on Twitter, and Romo tweeted out, he said, I kind of like this announcing. And then,
of course, Romo tweeted that out because he was doing
it. Wait. I had the responses to him. And if you just look at sort of the general Packer tweet sort of list as I go through, I mean, there was a lot of praise for Romo. So you'll have to look that up. I am not alone.
It's the, of course, people in Wisconsin are going to love their own. We always do. You know that.
Oh, I disagree.
We're going to prop our people up.
I never even thought of him as a Wisconsin guy. I think of him as a Dallas quarterback.
Well, I know he didn't play it. He didn't play at UW, and he didn't play for the Packers. But I mean, the guy grew up his entire life in southeastern Wisconsin.
Yeah, I know. That's not why I'm giving him the props. I don't.
Yes, it is. Come on,
be
honest. 302 podcasts. It's about time you started being honest.
I never even thought of that. He was very, very excellent. So I felt like I was into this
game. I know you never thought of being honest. I know you never think of being honest. I understand that. I'm asking to be honest for once. The guy wasn't that good.
All right, fine. Fair enough. Okay, so. Okay. Now,
I think it's something else that wasn't good, though.
Okay, go ahead.
Did you see the list of inactives before the game, and did you wet yourself? I mean, Randall Cobb, Bryce was out, House, Ryan, Perry, Bakhtiari, and Daniels. I mean, did you really think that they were going to show much when you have that many guys who are starters? And I think every single one of those guys is a starter, or in some situation, Ryan may or may not be a starter. But all those guys are starters, and a couple of really important ones, you know, Daniels, Bakhtiari. I mean, I think it's remarkable that they recovered and were able to kind of steal this one. In fact, at the end of the game, I was going to call 911 and report a theft in progress at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, seriously.
It was absolutely frightening to see those lists of inactives.
Yeah, I think because we're so used to the idea that if we have Aaron Rodgers, we have a chance. I think a lot of people felt we were going to win this game. You know, it's going to be a little bit tighter because of the injuries, but we were still going to win comfortably. I think that's kind of the view that I had listening to other podcasts and reading stuff this week. And you're right. We had so many important players out today, and it really showed in the first half that, this is not the team we're going to be, hopefully, in December and January. So I think this is an amazing win for them. A few things broke in their favor. Mixon tripped on that last handoff to get to a fourth down. Yeah. How often is that a first down and their defense stays on the field? I mean, that was a huge break that they got to that fourth down.
I think that was the universe punishing him for his sorted off-the-field behavior.
Yeah, I said it was the ghost of Lombardi.
Good. Him up. Yeah. Nice play, Vince.
Yeah. And, so there are other things, like Josh Jones, his play. I mean, if you substitute him for someone else who doesn't make those plays, I think Cincinnati might get a few more first downs. We lose this game.
That guy was nails, man. He had 11 tackles. He was crazy out there.
Yeah. He gave up a touchdown. I'm guessing his fault, but I suppose that's what you have to live with when you live.
I think it was his fault. I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, these are young players. In fact, the first half, I thought it was the tail was. You can go over and over. Is a young player making a mistake? Another young player making a mistake? I mean, we have all these young guys, but partially it's the way we build our team, but it's also the fact that we had all these injuries, too. So if you had different guys out there, I'd like to think we'd have won more comfortably. But I think this is a very good win for this team. I mean, it'd be nice to get King and Josh Jones, playing time now and not lose a bunch of games and have them more seasoned for the end of the season, because I think you're going to have to play with Kevin King and Josh Jones later. So I'm really impressed. I mean, there's so many things that are just surprising with this game. There's a pick six, which never happens.
Oh, boy.
Rodgers,
what, twice in his career? Is that right?
Yeah, that was his second. Yeah. It was an overtime win, which Rodgers had not had.
Right.
It was a comeback win, which we rarely see. I mean, there's all kinds of things that they overcame in this game. It felt really different to have won this game.
Yeah, I was, of course, being facetious. I didn't actually dial 911, but it was a theft in that they, for most of the game, I think they were outplayed, and they really couldn't get a rhythm going. I think the offensive line problems were a big part of that. They're missing guys on defense. They're relying on young, inexperienced players to make plays. But somehow, they hung in there. And I think, Dave, the key part of this whole thing was that the defense, after the first Cincinnati possession of the second quarter, the defense really closed things down. I mean, if you look at the drive chart, you know, they gave up a field goal the rest of the way in. There were several, you know, stops. I want to say maybe four that they had from that point on in the game. They just closed things out. Now, the offense wasn't able to respond the way you like them to, but the defense held the line. And I think that was really big, especially, you know, when you're without Mike Daniels in the middle of that defense. You've got no Nick Perry. You won't have him on Thursday night against the Bears either. There was no Jake Ryan. There's no Devon House. They didn't have Bryce, who had become a big part of their defense. And that, to me, was really encouraging. Now, I know Cincinnati's offense hadn't scored a touchdown coming into this game. They're not a great offensive unit, but the Packer defense rose to the occasion, and it put them in position to win the game. I mean, that's all you can ask of that defense. And I was impressed, and I think that was really the key part of this game, was the way that the defense shook off a really bad kind of quarter and a quarter, and then for the last overtime. So the last three quarters, they played really, really well. They got some pressure. They stopped the run. I was very happy to see that. Now, will they be able to do that against a better offense like we saw last week in Atlanta? I'm not so sure. But for this particular time, they did what they had to do to help the Packer offense secure the victory.
Yeah, I think that's right. The defense, I think, needs to get a medal for this game, for how they played in the second, as you say, after they had, well, where's that drive chart? You know, they went down and scored right away. Then they scored their third possession, and then they really were shut down for most of the rest of the game. And I guess I was so frustrated with the offense that I just felt like the whole team had played bad. But you're right, the defense actually stepped up and did well. There are a couple of guys I wanted to point out. What did you think of Blake Martinez's play?
You know, I thought this was the first game, and he's now been a year and three games. I thought this was the first time he looked like a player. I was pleased that he had I don't have the tackle chart right in front of me, but I think he was second on the team in tackles.
Yeah, 11 tackles.
He was very active, a surprise, because he just hasn't been that kind of player. Now, he's got some deficiencies in coverage.
Right.
We saw that on the first touchdown. He's not great in space that way. But around the line of scrimmage, I thought he made a difference today.
Yeah, I thought he played better second half. First half, when they were playing poorly on defense, I thought he was really a liability in coverage. And, you know, very much of an A.J. Hawk type player in coverage.
He got the same number.
Yeah, yeah, it looks the same. And I thought, yeah, we're not going to win with a guy like Blake Martinez. I mean, he's fine. He's average. But he made some plays at the end. He was good against the run. I thought he might get a taunting penalty on those last, that big hit he had.
Yeah, like, I mean, a Stanford man misbehaving like that? I was kind of out.
But certainly Josh Jones, I thought, gave you a, you know, he wasn't perfect. He's not a Pro Bowler yet, I think. But his upside plays were really high. And when he had sacks, he had tackles for loss. You can tell he's a fresh body kind of flying around there. He certainly looked very good. But again, haha, Clinton Dix. I mean, this guy he's supposed to be the leader on this defense. This is supposed to be his year where he's really jumping out. I know you're going to give me a hard time for keep bringing him up.
No, you're right. You're right. He's not shown what I hoped he was going to show to this point.
I mean, Morgan Burnett, I think, is – I can't say. I mean, he had more tackles than HaHa did. And I think HaHa's role is, you know, he plays – but when they span back on the camera, you know, you have guys up, you know, within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, and then HaHa is like 20 yards back. So, I mean, I guess he's not in a position where he's going to make a lot of big plays. But, I mean, he's not breaking up passes. He's not, putting big hits on guys. I mean, he's really invisible.
Exactly. That's the word that I was going to use. Yeah. And the only time he does show up is when he's not doing a very good job.
Yeah, right. I mean, he seems like he overruns runners, you know, so he's I thought at least early there was a play where he kind of really missed his guy, where he had a chance to kind of lay him out. Markham Barnett, too, I think he had fine. He had five tackles. But again, these two guys are supposed to be big parts of your defense. They both feel somewhat invisible to me.
Well, here's a thought, and I don't know the veracity of this thought, but let me just throw it out there. Was it possible that because Clinton Dix and Burnett were playing stably, that allowed Jones to do other things? Like, he had a couple sacks today. He's able to rush the passer because you have a couple of guys who are kind of nailing it down A.J. Hawk style, minding their manners back there, and that does free up other guys to do stuff. Now, I don't know if that's true, but sometimes when we don't see guys pop out, it's because they're doing things that allow the other guys to make those plays. You always hear about the defensive line and the 3-4 scheme. A lot of those guys are trying to hold up blockers so that the linebackers can rack up all the tackles. And maybe this was a case with some of the defensive backs. You know, they're playing all the time now, the 5 and 6 defensive backs on the field. Not everybody can be in a playmaking position, and it might be that Jones is – by virtue of what the scheme gives him, he's in a more of a playmaking position. Don't know if that's true, but it's a theory that I have kind of based on how I've seen Dom Capers' defense work in the past. You just have to have some guys that are stable on the back end that allow other guys to take risks.
That might be. I mean, there may be a couple sacks, and they may have been made by Josh Jones because, Clinton Dix is covering a receiver and he can't throw it. That's true. He might have had a better game that way, but when I see him in action, he looks very pedestrian and slow and, you know, just always coming to the play 5 minutes late. So, you know, he's got to be a great player for us to have a Super Bowl-type season, I feel like. That's how they set up the expectation. Both those safeties are supposed to be very, very good. And I guess they really haven't. So when they played the Nitro package this game, Chris, it's felt like Josh Jones was the middle linebacker. Does that mean that Morgan Burnett did not, or do they split that role? Does Morgan Burnett then play safety? Do you recall how they sort of played that out?
I was looking at that. Morgan Burnett was in the linebacker spot a lot, and you know there were times that they were playing, you know, three guys kind of as inside linebackers, and Burnett was often there. But it did seem like Jones got his crack too, you know, close to the line of scrimmage. But they used Jones from the slot on his sacks. In fact, I believe one of them I can think of, they put both of those guys, both Burnett and Jones, were coming from the slot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they're moving those guys around. And I think that they realize that Jones is the kind of guy that's more effective probably when he's closer to the line. And we saw I don't know what it is about the coverage, but I don't think that coverage right now at this point is one of his strengths. So I think they like to get him in that Morgan Burnett kind of role. But it seemed like Burnett was on the field most of the time, though. So they were both out there, and I think that they were both playing up close.
Okay, I noticed Josh Jones really jumps out, and Morgan Burnett did not as much. But I don't know if that was just how the plays developed. You're right, on that sack, they both hit the quarterback almost at the same time, but Jones got there first.
Yeah, so. I thought they'd give each a half on that, but they wound up giving the full sack to Jones, which is fine. The main thing is that Dalton went down, and he went down hard, as they like to say.
Well, and how did you think about Kevin King, how he played?
You know, I thought he didn't make the same kind of plays that he made a week before, but, you know, he had a tough assignment. You know, Green is a very good receiver, has been for a long time in the league, and he had over 100 yards receiving. King was on him a lot of the time. It was a tough call, but I think he played pretty well. He had seven tackles, the way it looks. I don't see the stats on the passes defensed. I'm not sure that he had any, but he drew a tough card, And I thought he was okay given who he is, where he is in his development, and the guy that he was playing against. Obviously, wasn't like he last week when he was knocking passes down, but I thought he was all right.
Yeah, I did too. It was a tough call, or a tough draw that he had today.
Yeah.
I thought the one play he had where he got a penalty on, I thought that was kind of a veteran move. I mean, he did grab.
Oh,
green,
yeah. Yeah.
But it was close, right? It's the kind of things that other good corners get away with a bunch of times, and I feel like, you know, keep with that a little bit and don't, you know, be physical with those receivers, and as you get to respect, you're not going to get that flag. So I think there's good – it's good performance by King in the future. I think I'm surprised that he's the guy that's going to play the other team's star receiver, but I guess that's true because of the injuries. But, you know, as hopefully he improves, that could be a big, big win for the defense.
You know, it's nice to see Brooks make an impact today.
Yeah.
You know, he was able to get a sack, get a tackle for a loss. He showed up, and it was really the first time he missed the last game because he was in the concussion protocol, didn't play a lot in the first game because he got the concussion. But today he looked like he's a guy who they could put out there and was going to make some plays. And this is a defense that needs playmakers, especially at that spot. And with Nick Perry out, they needed Brooks to show up, and I thought that he did.
Yeah. In fact, I thought he looked very Nick Perry-like.
Yeah.
You know, Nick Perry is very good at times, and he disappears at times too. And but so I thought Ahmad Brooks played well. I think Clay Matthews was playing hard as well, but he wasn't as impactful as other guys. But I think he's still disruptive. I'm glad that he's healthy and he's always in there. I think he's going to have a 3-sack game coming up. He does well against the Bears. I wonder if he will kind of shine against them. But yeah, I think there are parts of the defense, even though the first half was so atrocious for everything they did, I thought there were some positive signs for that defense tonight.
Yeah, you know, and I was satisfied with that, and I know that they're playing at home, which is an advantage, and against an offense that has struggled. But, you know, they did what they had to do, and let's not forget, the defense only gave up 17 points. I mean, 7 of those points came on the pick six. And so the defense, I mean, you hold an offense to 17 points, you know, you're doing well, and I don't care if it's the Cincinnati Bengals. They got a decent quarterback. They got a good receiver. They got a couple of good running backs. You know, I think they've got some talent there, so it wasn't just a collection of stiffs. So the defense, hats off to them. You know, on this podcast, we tend to talk more about the offense on this podcast because, let's face it, the Packer offense has been spectacular pretty much since the time they've had Aaron Rodgers and even, you know, in the Brett Favre days. This has been an offensively oriented team. But today, I think it's a time to celebrate the defense because once they got, you know, by the first quarter and a quarter, I thought that they did well, and to hold them to 17, that allowed the offense enough time to figure it out and to get the win.
Well, let's talk about the offense then for a little bit. What did you think about the scheme that they were running when things weren't working in the first half?
They were running a scheme? I didn't recognize any discernible pattern. Sorry.
Well, I thought what I was seeing is, you know, you're having trouble blocking their pass rush. Everything is down the field. Guys weren't open. It was kind of the same thing that we got back to in 2015 and parts of 2016 when we struggled. And we didn't hardly throw any to our tight ends. Didn't throw a few to Ty Montgomery, I suppose. I guess he had 8 receptions, but it felt like they were all just they fooled no one.
Well, they were essentially those runs. I mean, they were more running type passes, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying? The short pass to gain a couple of yards on first or second down.
But I don't know if I can't quite figure out when the offense is just stalled like they were in the first half. Is Rodgers just not throwing to open guys and he's just looking for Jordy down the field? Or is the play such that they're just trying to do what they want to do and they're not taking what the defense is giving them? I can't tell from the TV, but when they can't move the ball, given Rodgers, you know, how good he is, it makes me feel like they're missing something that's there for them. I know there is, I think, one play someone tweeted that someone was wide open across the middle. They would have got a first down. Instead, he went down the field. And I feel like, does that happen all the time? I don't understand how this offense gets so kind of in their own way at times.
Well, we're doing this on Sunday night. The game, you know, has only ended about three hours ago or so. So really having a chance to look at it again and to hear other people talk about it and read stuff. But my sense of what might have been happening, two things. I mentioned the offensive line earlier. It is very tough in the Packer offense to have guys who are getting run over. I mean, Murphy, there's no question he's a battler. Yes, I'm not saying that he's not, but you could see that he was not able to anchor effectively. And after Bulaga went out, it was the same thing on the other side. They're either not strong enough, or their technique isn't quite right, and that tends to collapse that pocket in where Rodgers doesn't have the room to move around. And like you mentioned last week, I think it's in his head too. I mean, he knows what he's got to work with, and so the clock in his head is probably spinning a lot faster as well. I think what also might be happening is, you know, teams can see when the Packers do those shorter passes, they're more effective, and so then when you come up and you play some bump and run against that team, they don't get those quick breaks off the line in the same way, and the short passes just aren't quite as available. Now, I didn't zero in to see how much Cincinnati was going with that sort of, you know, sitting on those tight routes and not giving them a free release. And if that was the case, which I think it might have been, you're not going to be able to do as much of the quick passing because it's just not going to be there in 1.5 seconds. And then you have the issues then when you go with your lineman. Jarry Evans, I was watching him a little bit today. I can see why New Orleans decided it was time to move on.
Yeah.
I don't think he's bad, but he's kind of just a guy at this point. And in addition to having trouble with the tackles, I think they got a problem at right guard. Again, not that he's bad, not that he's like Jeff Saturday in his one season with the Packers, but he gets beat and he collapses. And for a savvy veteran, I know they got beat on a twist at one point. You know, guy came right up the middle clean. I think Evans was screened off from getting in the way of that guy. But they've got some problems there too. It's not an embarrassment or anything like that. But you know, he is not TJ Lang. Clearly, he's not that guy.
Right. No, that's right. But I think he's not a liability as much as the tackles. But
true.
I think you're right that he's not someone who's going to carry your team. But you know, if we run the ball more, I wonder if you could tell like he does do better in the run game. There's one. I never really noticed Evans except the one time there was. Some guy came clear up the middle, and Evans is out in the middle of nowhere blocking no one. And like, dude, that was your guy that just ran past you.
Well, they ran that twist, and what they did was the one inside guy came in. He occupied the center, and then Evans was screened off from getting back around to get the guy who was coming on the twist the other way. And, you know, when they run the games like that, that's when you think, you know, a veteran guy, he's going to know how to get over there, or somebody's got to get over there. Don't forget, too, when you play Ty Montgomery in the backfield, I know he gives you a lot as a receiver. He can run once in a while, but blitz pickup, you know, he's not, at this point, he's not a very good blocker in the backfield. And I don't know if he was in on that particular play. That's when a guy like John Kuhn is really valuable, because he was a guy who was going to catch that guy coming free. I mean, think of the 2013 season ender against the Bears, back when they still had Julius Peppers on the Bears. And it was John Kuhn who was able to get Peppers and just chip him just enough to give enough time to Rodgers to find, I think it was Cobb, right, downfield.
Right.
And I don't think they have that guy in the backfield. I think you're sacrificing that with Montgomery in the backfield. So there's a lot of things that aren't quite right, and I don't know that it's Rodgers per se, but I think it's the protection around Rodgers and the guys up front, and it might be a little bit of the confidence in his own head. I mean, these are all factors. Now, That said, it wasn't a problem when he found Geronimo Allison for 72 yards in overtime.
Yeah, yeah, that, great play.
That worked out fine. Yeah. And a great run, too. I mean, there were, what, three cutbacks that Allison made? I mean, that was just a great, great Donald Driver-type run.
Yeah, it was excellent. And it wasn't just that catch. The last drive where we scored,
he had
a number of great catches. And I think they need to have Cobb or Allison, that third receiver, step up because they are on. They know it's going to Jordy, so they have their best receiver, best corner, and probably double covered Jordy Nelson. They certainly are paying attention to Adams, so I think that allows your third receiver to have a big game. So I think that's why Cobb, I guess, was the leading receiver up to before this game, and then Allison had the most yards, most catches. I mean, not most catches, but most yards,
right,
big plays out of anyone else. So I think that's how they're going to have to maybe do this until they start to lighten up and play it more straight where they're covering everybody. So Allison was a huge hero tonight. He played outstanding. That makes him much, much better to have him play at that level, because when Cobb comes back healthy, then you really have four receivers who then are playing that you feel confident in and are playing at a high level. But what do you make of Martellus Bennett? The guy seems really disinterested to me out there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this, Chris. There is one point I could tell that Bennett was frustrated. He's like, when Rodgers is scrambling, rather than just dump it off to Bennett, he'd run out of bounds. And Bennett wasn't getting any throws. And there was one when they came out of the huddle, and Bennett said something to Rodgers, and Rodgers just looked at him, and I thought, he's definitely throwing it to Bennett this play. I thought, he must have said, like, throw me the darn ball or something, variation of that. And it was. The very first, that play, he threw it to Bennett for like a 2 yard, and he got pushed out of bounds. So I think Bennett is going to get frustrated if he has so little part of the offense. And I don't understand why Bennett, it seemed like all the way up until the end, they had a tight end screen they threw to him that worked out. But most of his routes seem to take him to the sideline. And he's big, but when he's next to the sideline, guys can just push him out of bounds. Why is he not staying in the middle of the field where he can catch it and he can make a guy miss? He can move. He's big. It feels like they never are throwing to him over the middle.
Well, they did throw to him today over the middle, and he dropped the ball.
Well, that's
now,
maybe
now
is that
granted
why?
That well, you know, he's had a fair number of drops. You know, today he had just the one, and that was the one where it was kind of a reminiscent of JerMichael Finley, not just because against the Bengals, but you know, he was coming across the middle, and Rodgers put it in a place that Bennett should have caught it, but he took a big hit at the end of it. But as I recall, though, they like their tight ends to play on, or at least to run routes to the perimeter. You know, think of the pass to Cook. I guess there was a couple of them on that last drive against Dallas. Those were sideline. Those were toe tappers.
They were, but they're down the field.
Right,
like Bennett was always like within 5 yards.
Well, yeah, Bennett had three catches for 12 yards and a long of six. So yeah, it wasn't you take out that one. He had two catches for 6 yards. He had a 4 yard average. It may also have been just how the play developed. Now Kendricks, on the other hand, you know, he only had two catches, but he had 52 yards in those two catches. He seemed to be available across the middle. And you know, he did fine. He did great with that. So it may have been when you're playing a two tight end system, you know, somebody's going to get the middle of the field and somebody is going to get outside the numbers, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd like to see this offense be more diversified in who they're throwing the ball to. I think Kendricks and Bennett could be very key to this offense and catch a lot of balls at the middle, 4 or 5. You know, 8 yard throws where if they make a guy miss, then it can turn into, you know, 10, 20 yard type catches or receptions. So through the first half, at that point, hardly Kendricks or Bennett had many catches. And I thought, you know, here we have these two tight ends. They're supposed to be special. They're playing a lot. And yet we seem to be using them not at all. And I didn't understand that. But as the game developed, certainly Kendricks had that big play. Bennett was part of the last couple drives and had a couple of decent plays. But, yeah, Bennett is dropping the ball a lot. And I suppose that you lose your confidence from your quarterback if he doesn't trust that you're going to catch the ball.
Well,
it's going to be a problem because Bennett's going to be a complainer if he's not part of the offense.
Well, Bennett's not the most nifty guy either in space. I mean, he's kind of a lumbering guy. He's not Jared Cook. I mean, you know, Cook, I think, was a lot more fluid athlete. And so I saw somebody on Twitter, you know, commented, they, you know, said, you know, Jay Cook greater than, you know, M. Bennett. Yeah. And, you know, I got to say, right at this point, based on what I've seen of those guys as Packers, yeah, Jared Cook was a better player when he was healthy, just more dynamic. He seemed to be able to get open and run with the ball better. You know, Bennett is on the wrong side of 30. I mean, maybe he's not the player that he was. Now, he's a big target. He's a better blocker than Cook. But right now, at this point, he seems to have kind of stone hands. I'm not exactly sure why that is, if he's not comfortable in the system. But he's kind of just a guy right now. If he wasn't coming with a pedigree, you know, you'd say, well, who is this guy and why is he playing?
Yeah. I think they need to get him involved in the offense early in the game, get him a catch. You know, you can do one of those fake handoff roll out and your tight end is shooting free in front of you. Get him that first catch and get him involved in the game. I actually think Bennett is a better player than Cook. It's just that they're not really throwing the ball. It seems like he's not really interested in running his routes that hard. He seems like he's just a disinterested player. I can't quite figure it out. I think he's good enough that we need him as part of the offense. So I hope they figure that out and get him involved. If we have another couple games like this where he's catching three balls for a total of, what is it, 12 yards?
12 yards, yeah.
You're going to start to see him squawk, you know, interviews and things. I think he could be a disruptive factor. I don't think you want to cut him. I think you want to get him involved, and I want him to be a positive part of this offense. I think he can be it. I thought he had one catch. He caught it, and he made sort of a move to kind of shake his tackler that, you know, Richard Rodgers doesn't have that sort of – I mean, as for a big guy, I think he is relatively quick on his feet and can make people miss. I think he's a good player. I think they're not really using him very much.
He might be a good player, but so far this year – not really. I mean, he's dropped a lot of balls.
Yeah, he's. I think he's a good player, but he's not been playing.
He's right. Good. I mean, right. Yeah. I mean, that's. I think that's the thing. You can be a good player that's not playing good, and I think that's what we have right now. But you know, let's face it. It's the third game. It's a new system for him. Some people pick it up faster than others. You know, even Kendricks, he had a good game, but you know, he's not exactly been letting the world on fire either. I think there's something to be said for, you know, figuring out your teammates, what the system is, what the quarterback does, all those kinds of things. It doesn't come right away. You know, we're three games into a 16-game season, so I don't want to be too harsh this soon in trying to make evaluations about these guys. The bottom line is that despite the fact that they only had, well, let me see here, 64 yards running the ball, and you know your tight ends of, you know, five catches between them, they still won the game. You know,
yeah,
they still won
right.
the game, and that really is what it comes down to. They won a game where they had a bunch of starters who didn't even make the roster. They lost another starter during the game when Bulaga went down, and yet they found a way to win. That, to me, is the bottom line.
And they won because their stars really stepped up at the end. Rodgers played great at the end of the game.
He did.
Jordy Nelson, my gosh, you know, most guys don't catch that ball in the end zone like he does and stay in bounds. I mean, that was just an amazing catch. You know, Geronimo Allison played great. There was some plays that Devontae Adams had that were excellent. Ty Montgomery had a tough run at the end. I mean, they stepped up in that last drive. And, you know, it's rare that we've had a end-of-game drive that ended in a touchdown like that, Chris. I don't know how many times we've had that comeback or tie touchdown that we needed. I mean, there's been a lot of games where we fall short.
Well, it was maybe in your mind it was a touchdown. It was a field goal. But you were probably smoking some of Mason's special stash. I can understand how that happens.
Wait, what are you talking about? Field goal. I'm talking about the touchdown at the end of the game.
Oh, I thought you meant the touchdown or the score that won the game.
Oh no, I'm talking about the touchdown that.
Late in the game.
Yeah, that's right.
But I'm glad you mentioned Jordy, because I don't see that he's eroded as much as some observers, and one of them being, you know, my eldest son who follows the Packers pretty closely. He's seen more erosion in Jordy's game than I have, and maybe it's because last year, you know, was a good year for him. We didn't see him the year before that, and maybe I've forgotten exactly how dynamic he was. And as I think about it, he made a lot of twisting, impossible kinds of catches. He still makes a lot of great catches along the boundary. I don't know that he's quite the threat downfield maybe that he was, but the guy did catch 6 balls today. He had 52 yards. He had a 23-yarder. He had a couple of touchdowns. And I think he's still a valuable guy for them, even though he's not maybe what he was, you know, 3 or 4 seasons ago. I think there's a lot to like still about that. I think he's still a real valuable player, if for no other reason, because he's on the same page with Rodgers, and that is increasingly important. You can see that when guys just don't know what Rodgers is doing, disaster ensues. That didn't happen with Jordy Nelson. So maybe he's not getting those, you know, 70-yard, you know, touchdown where he races across the field and beats the guys to the end zone. Maybe those days are done. But I think he's still a real important weapon.
So valuable. Yeah, so valuable. Sometimes I think Rodgers' laser focuses on him.
God, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, someone else is wide open, you know, across the middle somewhere. But, they need both those guys to win games like this. If Nelson was one of the guys that were hurt like he was last week, we might not win this game. But
now, are you surprised?
We should take a break. Take a break?
No, we're not going to take a break.
We're going to take a break.
I'm going to mention about Aaron Rodgers first, and then we can take a break.
Okay.
Are you surprised when you look at the stats that his passer rating was 102.6?
You mean too low? Actually, I don't know what my opinion was.
That high. I mean, because of the pick six, because they seem to struggle so hard. Now, I know the 72-yarder at the end added a lot of yards, and, you know, I mean, that maybe helped his rating be as high as it was. But he seemed to me that his rating would have been about what it was last week when it was around 90. Did you think he had a plus 100 quarterback rating day?
If you would have asked me as the game was over, I don't really know how the calculation happens. I mean, the pick six, I'm sure, is a big negative. But then with that 72-yard pass at the end, I wasn't surprised, actually, when I saw 102.6. I thought, oh, that's – so he had ended up having a decent game. I don't know if I had an opinion, really. I don't know if I had an opinion.
I was surprised just because it didn't feel like it was that good. Now, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. I mean, I don't think you get demerit points for being a pick six. But, you know, an interception really kills that rating. It's got to be the 72-yarder at the end that really helped him out. And he, you know, completed, you know, 2/3 of his passes. Dalton, on the other hand, 124.1.
Yeah.
And in the same way, he didn't – I mean, he was okay, but he didn't seem like he was that good either to me. Maybe it's because, you know, he only had 212 yards passing. They won the time of possession. But Dalton didn't seem that good either to me. I'm not sure what it was. But I just wanted to get your opinion. That's all before I release this into the break that we have to have because your girlfriend Pamela just won't cooperate with us.
She does. She needs a break. She only goes about a half hour at a time.
She's a tramp. You know that? Yeah. All right. Chris and Dave will have more Packers therapy for you. In just a bit, we're going to talk some more about the Packers' overtime victory, 27-24 over Cincinnati. Packers now move to 2-1 on the season as they get ready to play the Bears in just a couple of days on Thursday night. So we'll be back, talk some more about the game, do some betting lines, maybe have a couple of listener participation things, and maybe pop culture, maybe, Dave? Do you have any pop culture?
I do have a pop culture, yes.
Well, then people can look forward to that. So all kinds of stuff still to come on Packers Therapy with Chris and Dave. Chris and Dave back with Packers Therapy. We're going to talk a little more about the Packers-Bengals game. We'll get to the betting lines, pop culture, all kinds of stuff coming up. But before we leave this particular game, we have a feature that we've started here on Packers Therapy this season in honor of our unbeknownst sponsor, the good folks in Cambridge, Massachusetts at the Harvard Business Review. Somebody told us that that's the ad they heard adjacent to this podcast. And so in honor of those smart guys at Harvard who write the Harvard Business Review, we're going to have the smart player of the week. Dave, I know you've given this considerable thought because because that's what we do here on Packers Therapy.
Hours and hours, yes.
Preparation. Preparation is what we do. So who is your smart player of the week, sponsored apparently by Harvard Business Review?
Yeah, I've been creating case study after case study, trying to think who gets my award for the Harvard Business Review. And I'm going with not a Packer, not a Bengal. I'm picking an announcer in Tony Romo. He is my smart player of the game. I'm telling you, Chris, the guy could see plays before they happened. He interpreted plays in ways that I had not seen before.
I think he did some modern dance interpretation in some of these. Yeah,
he changed my life. He is that good.
So he is kind of the Kreskin of NFL announcers. Is that what you're telling me? Because he knows these things. I've never met you, sir. This is the first time we're talking about it, and you're going to do a running play. See, that's how good he is. He's like Kreskin.
He's like Kreskin. That's funny. The second time I hear it too.
Well, yeah, we had a little audio problem. So yeah, believe me, it's a lot funnier before Pamela died on us here. We should have a memorial service for Pamela.
Yeah, well, she's back, and we're hoping she stays up a little bit longer. Pamela, just stay with us.
Boy, I think you should listen back to what you just said about Pamela. Anyway, my smart player of the week was actually, I'm going to give it to the Bengals. I'm going to give it to the Bengals because I think it was very smart of them to take a knee and not try to do anything foolish in those last few seconds of regulation. I thought that maybe they would try to, you know, force it down the field and run the risk of, you know, making a mess of things. Instead, they took a knee, ran out the clock, and they decided that they would fold up like a cheap suit in overtime. But I think it was smart of them to just play out the string and try their luck, which didn't prove out too well for them, but I think it was a smart move for them to make. So thank you, friends at Harvard Business Review, for making our buddies CD and Al wealthy, apparently, by sponsoring this podcast. So there you have it.
Well, as I did the first time, I wanted to give a second Harvard Business Review award to either Aaron Rodgers or Corey Linsley for the last play or, you know, one of the last plays that was the big bomb to Allison. He drew the Cincinnati Bengals offsides. And what's so smart about that is he doesn't do it all game long. He picks his spots, and maybe there are spots where it's third and four, or this would be a great time to do it. But he doesn't seem to always do it at obvious times. And he waited all game. Maybe he did it a couple times, but he did it right at that spot. He got a guy to jump, and that allowed him then to have the confidence to throw that downfield, knowing he had a free play, and it turned into a 70-plus yard reception, which I thought was fantastic. So I suppose, along with Tony Romo, I would like to give an award to either Linsley for hiking it when he saw the guy jump, or Rodgers for picking that time to draw the guy off sides. It was a great play. Turned out to be, you know, the difference in the game.
Well, Dave, dermatologists agree you should not pick your spots. Just not. It's not healthy. It's not good. It can cause infection. So try to avoid picking your spots.
Well, tell that to Rodgers.
I will. Well, the next chance Aaron's over at the house here, I'll be sure to mention that to him. And I'm glad, by the way, that this time around you were more careful in the words you chose because that didn't set me up for the joke that we used before.
Oh, yep, sorry. I can't. I'm not consistent.
I'm sure that we will be able to get back to that joke later on in the season. Okay. So anyway, there's one more thing I think to cover. We didn't really talk about special teams, and I think it's worth mentioning both on the in the punting game and the punt and kick returning game. I'm liking this Justin Vogel kid. Now I know he had the one shank punt that was not very good, but despite the fact that he had the one off the side of the foot, the guy still averaged 49 yards a kick and 44 net at a long of 61. And we were talking, I think just last week or the first game, about having a kicker that is able to reverse field position. And I like the fact the guy has a big leg, and I think he's only going to get better. He had one punt that pinned Alex Erickson. I'm surprised he isn't your favorite player. but pinned him along the sideline, and it was a long punt and angled. I mean, it was like it was textbook.
Yeah, he caught it with his foot out of bounds. Yeah,
yeah, and so I'm really thinking that this guy might turn out to be a weapon for them, and so I'm kind of excited about what he might be able to do. Now we'll see when the weather turns bad. Let's see how effective he's going to be. He punted at Miami. So I don't know how he's going to do in December in Green Bay, but so far so good from this guy.
Well, if he's from Miami, and something we didn't mention, this was the weather for him. They said was the hottest game in Lambeau Field history.
Yeah, 90 degrees.
That?
Yeah.
And they were here on September 24th, not the first game of the season, but the third. 90 degrees up in Green Bay. That's crazy.
It's been most of the week in Wisconsin. It has been like July, which July in Wisconsin is middle to upper 80s, humid, a lot of humidity, and it's pretty unpleasant. And September is typically this time of the year, especially late September, you're usually getting kind of, you know, low to mid 60s, sunny, dry. You know, it's a very comfortable time of the year. So we're getting July and September after having October and August, if you follow that. it's been very strange, but of course, you know, these weather patterns have nothing to do with global warming whatsoever. So anyway, very warm in Green Bay, and I got to tell you, I was worried on that last field goal, thinking, oh man, you know, it's wet, the ball's, you know, going to feel funny. You got to have Vogel's got to make the placement. I was waiting for something weird to happen that was going to keep the Packers from winning it, and it was going to be because of the weather conditions. But hey, as it turned out, they should play every game in 90 degrees if they're going to be able to come back and win in overtime.
Yeah, I guess. Actually, I was more concerned about the extra point to tie the game up at 24.
Oh, yeah.
I actually tweeted, I said they're going to miss this extra point. I sent it before it happened because I thought, maybe I'm Kreskin. But I wasn't right, and people called me out on it. But I just said my pessimism got away from me. I could just see that's how the game ends. Is now we're going to be talking about the long snapper and the holder with the punter being the holder and how, you know, we should have kept so-and-so. I could just see that happening. We'd lose the game on an extra point. Thank goodness we didn't. Mason Crosby was good on his field goals, good on his extra points. So at least
and
that was
high as a kite.
And high.
Totally blitzed the entire game. Yeah.
Stone cold.
Yeah. No, okay. No, Trevor Davis, you know, he is probably the best high school sophomore that they've had as a punt returner for the Packers. Guy, every time he catches the ball, I'm afraid he's going to get killed. He looks fragile out there, but he showed some things today. He's got some niftiness to, you know, evade tacklers in close space. He had 14-yard return or 14-yard average return on five punts. Only had one block-headed fair catch. I always thought the deal was if it was going to be inside the 10, you let it go. But he seems to like to catch the ball around the 10. I don't know what the deal is on that exactly. At least he's not dropping. I mean, no, that's a mark in the right direction. I will give the guy a little bit of break. He does have good speed, and he is showing some of that niftiness and elusiveness. So I don't want to cashier him too soon. But, you know, he's a small guy, and so far he hasn't gotten hurt. But I'm just kind of waiting for him to get busted in half.
Yeah, I think that might happen too. But I think there's a good chance he's going to return one for a touchdown too.
Yeah,
I feel like when he catches it, it's not the Randall Cobb sort of run to the sideline and get tackled easy. Or the Micah Hyde, which is going to I guess Micah Hyde had a return for a touchdown.
He did. I think he had two, I think.
Yeah, he was actually decent, but I think Trevor Davis is better than all of them. And
well, if he catches the ball, that's the number one thing, and he had a little trouble with that in preseason and last year. So as long as he catches the ball, that's the number one thing. I would prefer he not catch it inside the 10, though.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to catch it on the 10, at least, and there's no one in front of you for 20 yards, catch it and run.
Hey, that would be good,
So I think these are all things I'm hoping that in week 14, 15, 16, you know, these things have been sort of, the kinks are out of it, and, you know, he's a better returner. King is a better corner. You know, Jones has had a really solid season, that they get some savvy, you know, as the season progresses. That could make us a better team. And all these injuries will start to, guys will come back, but there's no guarantee that, Chris, we could have eight more guys get injured next week. I mean, it seems like that's the way it's going.
Well, I think it's going to help, assuming we ever see Vince Beagle. That would be a big help because, let's face it, Clay Matthews isn't going to play 16 games. I mean, that just doesn't happen very much any longer, at least. And then Nick Perry, I mean, he's already going to miss a couple of games. You know, he has proven to be the kind of guy that when he plays, he's okay. But when he the thing is getting him on the field enough. And when he comes back, he's probably going to have a club. So
like if they can just always wear a club.
Maybe that's the case. He was pretty effective with that thing last year.
Yeah. Well, I think, doesn't it feel like he's always been had a club on his hand? Like he's always...
There's always something with him. I mean, yeah. there's no doubt about that. But that's why if they can get some of these guys back, I mean, that would be a step in the right direction. I don't know how long, you know, Bakhtiari is supposed to be out, but I doubt we'll see him against the Bears. But maybe, you know, they'll have 10 days off. Then after that, then if he's ready and they can get Bulaga out there, I think they'll be okay. But right now, when you're playing with those two rookies and a veteran who I think is probably not any longer on the top of his game, that's going to be a real struggle for this offense going forward.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's a problem for another day. Right now, Packers win 2-1 on the season. It's a quick turnaround. They got the Bears coming in on Thursday night. Is that color rush? Is that what Thursday nights are now? When you wear your...
Do they? So what will the Packers, will they be some kind of neon yellow?
Well, I don't know. Were they white last time? I think they were all white.
Okay.
So, but I don't know if it's the same every year.
Yeah, I wonder if they mix that up. They could be a neon green or some kind of, like, glowing yellow. That could really be ugly.
Yeah, I'm kind of dubious about this, but I guess Nike is sponsoring it, and it's, you know, I mean, hey, NFL rings the cash register, man. That's what this is all about. But, yeah, that's coming up next for the Packers. So, if you have anything else on this game, or should we move on to the betting lines?
I think we move on.
All right, let's go on to the betting lines. Now, last week we had a good performance. Not as many as we would have liked, but we had 19, right? 19 players last
19,
week?
19, yep.
Yep, all right. And Mitno Miller has already responded by getting us the spreadsheet with the winners, and maybe we want to go over that and see who's going to be staying in the presidential suite of the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino in its new Reno location.
All right. So, Mike, thanks again for getting this turned around so quickly because we did the podcast tonight. Otherwise, we would have to do the podcast without the betting lines. So thanks to Mike. Are you ready to go for week 3 betting lines? Number 1, I asked you how many passes defended would Kevin King have. There is a stat of passes defended. You set the line at 1.5. I took the under on that one, and he had 0. And pass defended, maybe that's not a really good stat because I'm looking at the Packers' defensive chart here. Pass defended, 0. Cincinnati pass defended, 1. I guess that would have been the interception. I wonder if they call that a pass defended. I guess it should be, right? Interception.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can't defense it better than that, right?
That's right. So that must be the hardest stat to get in all the stats for football. The under got that one correct. Number 2, I ask you how many rushing yards would Ty Montgomery have? You set the line at 58. He had 35. Is that correct? 35? Yes. So he was definitely under. How do you think about that in the game? One, the fact that we rushed so little, that he had so few, but in that Jamal Williams got only one carry. What do you think about that?
You know, I 12 carries, it's probably about right for him, right? I mean, he ran 19 last week, I think it was, and that's probably too much, so it's probably better that they're running him less, but that's only 13 attempts, right, for running backs. That's a little bit light. On the other hand, they're a passing team. I mean, that's what they do, and I don't want to be inconsistent. In the past, we said it may be better if they never ran the ball.
Yeah.
So I think what they do instead is you saw the receptions for Montgomery. He had almost no yards. I think what they were trying to do was to simulate the run by passing him the ball and letting him get outside and run in space a little bit.
He felt tired to me. Didn't he? It seemed like after a few tackles,
he felt tired. You were feeling him.
I don't want to
get into that, but
telepathically. But didn't you think
you're
that?
Pressing, yeah.
Yeah. Well, didn't you feel that he, after a couple tackles, he kind of lay on the ground a little bit longer? I feel like it's the third week and he's already kind of banged up.
Well, you know, the shelf life on running backs in the NFL a lot of them don't get to 30. And, you know, you're taking a lot of pounding. And don't forget, you know, you get block on passing. You know, if you stay in the backfield, you got to throw your body into that. So that's more collisions and more hits that you're taking. So I don't know that I necessarily saw him being slower, but I know he plays a position where there's going to be a lot of wearing. And, you know, it was really hot and humid in Wisconsin today, and that may have also been a factor. He has a physiological condition, too, which may be impacted by extreme weather as well. So, you know, it's hard to know other than the fact that those guys who play that position in the NFL just take a hell of a lot of abuse.
Yeah. Well, he felt like he took a lot today. Number three, Andy Dalton. How many total passing yards would he have? You set the line at 243. He had 212. So the under had that one correct. Number four, how many sacks would Clay Matthews have today? You set the line at 1.5, and he had 0. Although I do feel that he was, you know, I don't see him as being invisible, but
no.
Because he's on the screen, you know, and he's moving around. Five, how many drops would Bennett have? You set the line at 0.5, and he definitely had one.
Yes.
Easy. I was thinking it might be tough for Mike to pay attention, but that was pretty obvious.
Well, Mike is not like Mason Crosby. I mean, the guy is not smoking one out, okay? Mike is dialed into the game.
That's
okay?
Right. Number six, given the Atlanta and how many plays they gave up that were big passing plays, how many passing plays would they give up today that were greater than 25 yards? And I think this is a big one, and you talk about the defense doing well as the game progressed. They had 0. You set the line at
3.5. Yeah, 3.5, yeah.
And they had 0, so I think that was a big win for them. Number 7, how many punts would you have? You set the line at 8.5, and they had 12. And I think that was a little bit of a story of the game, that the Packers' offense struggled more, and then Cincinnati struggled you know, as the game progressed. So we had 12 punts in that game. That's where Justin Vogel is important, and he changed the field position game in a couple of punts, which was good. We had a bonus question of name the offensive line lineup, and I think I was correct. I had Murphy, left tackle, Taylor, Lindsley, Evans, and Bulaga, right tackle. I think you had them, the tackles, reversed. You thought Bulaga would play left tackle.
Yep, I did.
And I wonder if it would have been a better move to do that.
In retrospect, it would be. But as you think about it, though, Bulaga, I don't know that he's played any left tackle in the NFL. He was supposed to be the left tackle a couple of years ago, but he blew out his knee in the family night scrimmage, and that's when Bakhtiari got his chance. And so when Bulaga came back, he was on the right side. So I don't know if they wanted to have that much disruption. In other words, Murphy had played left tackle the week before. Bulaga is a natural right tackle now. That's probably what they were thinking. But, boy, I mean, Murphy is just – he doesn't seem like he's physically ready to play that position. I mean, he was getting pushed around and pushed down quite a bit, and that's okay maybe in the short run, but I don't know if they can go much longer with that kind of collapse at left tackle.
Yeah. Yep, fair enough. The tiebreaker was how many points would the Packers have? We thought this might be a big game. I did. I said they get 35. You said 28, and they got 27. So, Chris, you were very close to that one. The winner this week, we have a single winner again. I don't know if that means he's married or single.
I was going to say, boy, I didn't know you know these people that well. Wow,
they have one winner. Bill in Delafield, Wisconsin. He got 6 correct. He will be going to the suite at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino in Reno, as you like to say.
Yes.
And that's your betting lines for week 3.
All right. Well, you know, if you want to play the betting lines with us, and we're about to set them for the week 4 game against the hated Bear, what you do is you send an email with your predictions. to our guy Mike, and you can get him at mitnomiller@gmail.com, and you can spell that for them, Dave. Make sure I got it right. MITNOMILLER @gmail.com, and you send your email and let him know what you think it's going to be. He puts on a nice spreadsheet for us, and we award the winner, and you get to have an all-expenses-paid exclusive week in the Presidential Suite Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino on the shores of Lake Tahoe. So it is a special occasion. We don't do any comps for gambling. You're on your own there, but I know that our listeners are high rollers, and this will be no problem at all. So,
I thought you were going to spell his name like Mickey Mouse Club. I thought you were MIT.
NOMILLER. Hey, it worked!
It was great. @gmail.com. Yeah, that's how you have to do it from now on.
Okay, boy. We didn't. That's like just like we rehearsed that one.
Yeah, that's all. Oh, and yeah. Pamela's out again. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God.
All right, you ready for the betting lines this week?
I guess so. Sure.
All right. You know, somebody wrote a review of our podcast on like iTunes and
why
said
did they
that,
do that
why they, it was more about Packers stock, and but they mentioned every once in a while they'll talk about, you know, which are the podcasts they like or don't like, and someone had said that they liked our podcast, but they didn't understand all our inside jokes. So,
well,
I guess.
These people, you need to listen. We have 302 episodes now. How long would it take you to go through and listen to – you want to listen to all 300, but maybe, I don't know, maybe 175. How long would that take you? That's not a big investment of time.
Yeah, I think it's fair to have a lot of inside jokes when you've done 302 episodes, right? You've got to keep it.
Well, for those people, we will refund their subscription fees.
That's right. Yeah. All right, betting lines. Number one, how many tackles will Josh Jones have this week?
Ooh. Now, he had 12 this week. He had 11 solos and one assist, I believe. You know, I think he was much more of a factor because they were without Bryce, and Evans cramped up. And he also, I don't think he played that well when he was in there. So I'm not sure he's going to get quite as much opportunity next time, depending on Bryce's health. So I don't expect 12 tackles from him, but I can still see him being a factor. So I'm going to set it at 6.5.
6.5. All right. I'm going to take the under. I certainly think he's a rising player, but I mean 12 is ridiculous.
It was a crazy game.
Just, yeah. Things just kind of fell in his favor. You know, I think he could have a very good game and have 5 tackles. Still be a, you know, a star. Depends on when those tackles happen. So I'll take the under.
Okay.
Given how many sacks there were on Aaron Rodgers this week, how many times will Aaron Rodgers be sacked next week?
He had 6 today, and it seemed like most of those 5 maybe in the first half.
Yeah, 5 in
yeah.
the first half, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they kind of got it worked out a little bit better as the game wore on. Bears have an improved defense though.
Yeah,
and that's a little bit of a cause for concern against a leaky offensive line. I don't think they'll give up 6, though. I'm thinking it's going to be more like around in the 4-ish neighborhood. So I'm going to say 3.5.
3.5, okay. I'm going to say under, only that, I mean, they have to be going back to the chalkboard and saying, all right, we cannot just have him sit back there and get sacked left and right. So I think they're going to get the ball out quicker. I think they may run the ball more. I don't know if it's going to be successful, but I think they're going to do a little bit better against the pass rush. I'm going to say under.
Chalkboard, Dave? I mean, what are you, like 85 years old?
Yeah, that's an expression. It's an inside joke. We should just tell.
When I say something dumb,
we'll just say inside joke.
every time a listener doesn't understand something, it's just an inside joke.
That's right.
It's not that we're nonsensical or inane.
Right.
It's just that it's an inside joke.
Number three, how many catches will there be by the tight ends this week? I think they need to be more involved in the offense.
They had 5 this week, correct?
I have, Richard Rodgers had 0, Lance had 2, and Bennett had 3.
Okay. You know, I think there'll be more this time, but I really don't know that they are going to feed the ball to the tight ends. They've got too many weapons on the outside, and I don't think it's going to be a typical week, but I don't think it's going to be a huge week either. I'm going to set that number, total catches for all three tight ends, not just those two, correct?
Right. Correct.
Yeah, I'll set it at 6.5.
I'm going to take the over. I think they get involved more
okay.
this game. That they, in order to get the ball out from Rodgers' hands, not get sacked as much. The chalkboard is going to tell them to throw it to the tight ends.
Okay.
Number four, how many turnovers will Green Bay's defense create? So they had, what, zero?
They had zero, right, yeah.
They almost had one right before the half. But they had zero, and the defense has not created a lot of turnovers. And they've been able to do that against Jay Cutler. But Jay Cutler's not there anymore. How many turnovers do you think they get?
Is Jay Cutler in Miami?
Where
did he wind up? Oh, okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
He threw the worst. I saw him throw a Hail Mary at around the 50-yard line, and he threw it to the 10-yard line about 5 yards out of bounds. It was the worst Hail Mary throw I'd ever seen.
So it was not a Hail Mary full of grace then.
No, that's right.
Yeah. As you guys say at your office. Anyway, okay. So what is the question again? Sorry.
How many turnovers?
Turnovers! Oh, yes.
Will the defense create?
I'm trying to think now. The Packers had zero today, but have they had any? I think they've had an interception this year, right? They haven't had many. There was a fumble, I know. So they haven't exactly been, you know, a turnover-forcing machine.
To think of what turnover they got. Did Seattle? Did someone fumble? Someone fumbled
yes,
in Seattle.
Yes, somebody did fumble in Seattle, and I think they had an interception, too. I don't know if it was against Seattle, but I think they didn't pick off Matt Ryan, so it must have been against Seattle.
Yeah.
The point is,
remember.
In three games, I think they've had less than a turnover a game.
Yeah.
So they are not, at this point at least, they're not really forcing a lot of turnovers. I don't know that that's necessarily going to change a lot. So between fumbles and interceptions, I will set that number at let's put the number at 1.5.
1.5. I was wondering if you're going to do half or 1.5. I will do over.
Okay.
I think they can get a turnover against the Bears at Lambeau Field.
Yep.
Number five, how many total rushing yards will Chicago have? They have two pretty good runners. One is a smaller guy in Tariq Cohen. But, you know, man, look at these rushing averages for today against what I thought was a good defense in Pittsburgh. Jordan Howard ran 23 carries for 138 yards, 6-yard average. Tariq Cohen, 12 carries, 78 yards, 6.5-yard average. So together this week they are 216. How many yards do you think they'll rush? Actually, that Mike Glennon added a few more, so they had 220 as a total. I'll include the quarterback as well. So how many total rushing yards for the team, the Chicago Bears?
Okay, so did they play Pittsburgh today?
Yeah, and won.
Wow, I mean, Pittsburgh is a team I think is going to go deep in the playoffs, too.
I did, too, yeah.
That's a lot of rushing yards against what I think is a pretty good defense. Maybe I underestimated the Bears. Okay. Let me see. I don't think they're going to go on quite that wild. In my estimation, watching the Packer defense so far this season, they've been pretty stout against the run. I mean, they you know, fracture a little bit against Atlanta, but they were great against Seattle, and I thought they were fairly solid today. I mean, there were a couple of times that, you know, Mixon and these people, Bernard, you know, did pretty well. But I think largely, you know, they're pretty stout in the middle, and I'm kind of liking that. So I don't think they'll go for 200. But as a team, I'm going to set the number for rushing yards for Chicago at 145.
145. I'll take the over. I really want to take the under, but I feel that that's a low. I think the Packers are going to do well against them in the rushing game, but I still think they get over 145. They can have a couple of bigger runs. I'm going to say over. Number six, Mike Glennon's quarterback rating.
Yeah, what did he do today against Pittsburgh?
74.2.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, he's not good, Dave. Let's
not
put
good.
It that way. No, he's not. Although I think he's got a halfway decent contract for himself. I guess you don't have to be that good if you're a quarterback in the NFL. You still kind of get paid. 74 today. Packer defense it's never easy going not from terrific again. I'm going to set the quarterback rating line for Mike Glennon at 86. I think I'll set 86.
86.
Yep.
I am going to take the over, only because we seem to inflate other teams' quarterback ratings more often than not.
Well, that is true. That is
true. Until they show that they don't, I'm going to take the over. Number seven. How many times will Green Bay rush, not including Aaron Rodgers? How many times do you think they'll hand off to running backs?
So today they had 13 carries by running backs, correct?
Yep.
I think they'll do more than that. I think that's a little light for them. I think we'll see more from Williams than we've seen, mainly because I think you're right about Montgomery's. You know, they want to save him. They want to preserve him a little bit. But I still don't think it's going to be a huge number. I'm going to set it at 18.5.
All right. I'm going to take the over here. I think they wanted to run the ball more today, but they just fell behind. And I think they panicked, frankly. I think they kept Montgomery in more, and they got away from Jamal Williams because they got down, and I think they wanted to establish, you know, get a win at home. So I think their desire, if they can get it to a lead, they'll run 20-plus. So I'll take the over. 7.5. Who do you think Green Bay's leading receiver will be? Not receptions, but in yards.
Oh, yards. Okay, yeah. I was thinking in terms of number of receptions. Well, today you had a 20-yard average from Adams, and you had 23 maybe from Allison. Right, it was a big number for both of those guys.
Yeah.
I kind of think that Jordy Nelson's become more of a possession guy. And if, especially if Cobb's not in the lineup, I think Jordy's the guy they look to underneath. excuse me, and I think Allison and Cobb are your downfield guys. So Allison and Adams. So
you're
I think
right?
I'm gonna, no, I've got something in my.
This is a tough question.
I got something in my throat beyond my tongue.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's going to be Adams.
All right.
That's refreshing. Okay, so what kind of number do we have here?
No, I just want to know the name. I'll take.
So you don't want me to come up with what I think the average is?
No, just the player. I'll pick Nelson.
Let's go with Adams. Yeah.
Okay, you go Adams. I'll take Nelson. And then in celebration of the long pass that won the game for us, what do you think will be the longest? This is a tiebreaker. Give me the number of yards for the longest pass reception in the game.
Well, is it any play or just a pass reception?
Just pass reception.
For the Packers?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to put that at 48 yards.
48. I'm going to do a 49.
Okay.
Get a long one against the Bears.
Okay.
All right, those are your betting lines this week.
All right.
Send it to MIT.
Yeah.
N-O-M-I-L-L-E-R
@gmail.com. Yeah. So anyway, yes, please. Yep. Yes. .com. This is going to be great. We need to record that.
I could drop it in.
In some place, Mike's got his head in his hands right now. Yeah. The guy is embarrassed as hell.
But changing his email address, yeah.
How do you solve a problem like Mike Miller? You know.
Very good.
Okay. All right. So is it time now for pop culture?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Me first?
Well, of course.
Okay. I watched a movie last night. It's I did. I watched it from the beginning to end like a big boy.
Oh, well, look at you.
It was called The Big Sick. Have you heard about this movie?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I had high expectations because I've heard nothing but really good things about this movie. It's a romantic comedy, but it's a Judd Apatow film, which some of his movies are more kind of gross humor, and this was not that. But it was a romantic comedy about, and I'm not going to know the actors' names. It is a comedian, but who is also acting. It's basically the story is there's this, a boy from Pakistan. It's not a boy, I guess he's 20 years old, but a guy from Pakistan who's in America, lives in New York. And his parents also are in New York, and they're very traditional, and they're trying to set him up with an arranged marriage. And he meets an American white woman who he falls in love with, and he struggles through his family, his relationship with her. There's something that happens, which might be given away in the title of the movie. But it's very, very good. It'd be a great date movie. It's just a good movie all the way around. So I highly recommend it. I really, really enjoyed the movie.
And it has Holly Hunter in it, and Ray Romano is in it, right?
Yeah, they're great.
The star, and actually one of the writers, is an actor from Silicon Valley. If you watch that on HBO, do you watch that one?
I don't. Comedy? Is that where he's from?
Yes.
Was he a stand-up comedian?
I believe he was, yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's what he is in the movie.
It's Kumail Nanjiani, is that it? Yeah, I think that's his name.
They use his real name in the movie then. I
mean, yes,
and I think it is actually based. I think the girl he's dating in real life is the actress in the movie too. I think I only heard a little bit about it, but and it is their story.
I'm that too. Yeah.
It's great.
That. And if it's worth seeing if you like his shtick on Silicon Valley, which I do. I think it's probably one that's worth seeing. But that one is you're giving it a recommendation to people to watch it, right?
Yeah, two thumbs up.
Okay.
Two thumbs up.
Good. Well, you do have two thumbs, so you might as well put them up. I've been watching a show that I just learned got canceled on Netflix. You know, Netflix is trying to cancel shows. I guess they think that gives them, I don't know, credibility or something if they cancel their shows. But this one ran just one season, and I'm halfway through it. I think we've mentioned in the past, you know, my wife's a mental health therapist, and so we're watching a show called Gypsy, which is on Netflix, and it's about a bad mental health therapist. Not a comedy, it's a drama, but her behavior is wholly unethical. It's an interesting show. It's not a good show, but it's compelling enough that we've made it through five episodes. We're going to watch the other five. If you like, I believe they would classify this as being a psycho thriller. If you like that genre, psycho thriller, qu'est-ce que c'est? Never mind. If you like that kind of thing, I think it's worth watching. It's 10 episodes. They've canceled it. It's only going to run for the 10. I think it'd be worth checking it out, but I would not put it on the top of everybody's, oh, yeah, you got to watch that. It's really for people that like that particular kind of drama. It's called Gypsy. It's on Netflix, if you get that. So if you like that sort of thing, check it out. But it's not like, you know, Breaking Bad, where I think everyone should give that a try.
I do have one more.
Oh, good.
Three episodes into The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh,
Have you watched that?
I have watched it. We watched it over the summer.
Okay, yeah, and it just won the Emmy for Best Drama. And
exactly. These
days, winning the Emmy for Best Drama is saying something. I mean, there's so
deep,
many.
Deep competition, yep.
Yeah. And I'm two in. I was going to watch the other one last night and had something wrong with my Amazon. Hulu. It's on Hulu, right?
Yes, it's a Hulu original, my friend.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to watching it. It's very dark and disturbing, though. Not for the family.
It's a dystopian sort of story based on a Margaret Atwood, the Canadian author. It's one of her books from quite a while ago. But in contrast to Gypsy, Handmaid's Tale is one people should seek out and watch. Really well done. Elizabeth Moss, who I think may have won Emmy, right, for her performance. I think she did.
Yeah, I might be. Yep.
And if you like her, I mean, she's in Top of the Lake. She, of course, was in Mad Men. She's even though Scientologist, she's a wonderful actress. I strongly recommend, and I'm glad you're watching it, Dave. That it just gets better as you go through it. And there's some very strong supporting roles. I forget her name now. The actress who plays the wife of Fred, the commander in the house, she is outstanding. And then Ann Dowd is in this one, and I believe she won Emmy also for her role. And there's just it's a very good, thought-provoking story. It is dark, but it is certainly worth checking out if you like, especially dystopian fiction.
Yeah, I mean, have to just so you know up front, rape is a main theme of the show. So you have to be prepared for that. But it's not
rape though. It's more ceremonial and ritualized rape. rather than, you know, the act of violence that it is, you know, usually associated with. And I think that also makes it more terrifying because it's sanctioned by the state.
Yeah, right.
And so that, yeah, so that is disturbing, but it's all in service of a point. And I do believe that they're going to bring it back for a second season, which will be beyond what the scope of the book was. So, yeah, so I would say that's a good investment of people's time.
And if you haven't gone out and watched Leftovers yet, because I think the Anne Doyd, or what's
Dowd.
Dowd.
She's
the Leftovers.
Yeah.
You should just go see Leftovers before you do anything else, if you haven't watched that show. Three seasons, it's so good. And watch it with some kind of summary. that's very important.
Yes, this is one. In fact, I think all of the more serious shows that are out there, usually Vulture or AV Club will do the summary review type things, and you get a lot more out of the shows if you do that. Leftovers, you need to do it. But watch Leftovers, because when you get to the, I believe it's the penultimate episode of season two, called International Assassin, which is one of the best episodes of television that I've seen, especially when you get to know these characters and builds up to that point. It is just terrific. I've watched that one episode a couple of times because it was just so damn good.
It was good. And, you know, speaking of the Emmys, there was the show that we like, A Master of None.
Oh, yes.
Particularly
okay.
The episode, that Thanksgiving episode, that won an Emmy.
It
as
should,
well.
Yes. Now, I know you've gotten down on me for my affection for Annie Hall, but the reason I am such a devotee of that movie, it is a comedy that is in service of serious points, and that's why Master of None is so good, especially that episode. It's comedy, but it is in service of a very serious point. A little bit like Groundhog Day, I would put that movie also in the same category. It's a comedy, but it's making some really profound and serious points, and Master of None is full of that kind of thing, especially that episode. I really recommend people invest themselves. I mean, they're half-hour episodes. I think it's, what, 10 in a season? So
yeah.
It's not a huge investment of time, but it is really, really well done.
Yeah, so good.
All right. Anything else?
Nope, that's all I have.
All right. So Packers win. Yay, Packers. Okay. and it was, you know, I mean, it was nip and tuck, but very satisfying, very rewarding overtime, especially when they've struggled in overtime the way they have. Glad for Aaron Rodgers. I'm glad that the Packers were able to come back, something they haven't been able to do much. And so that makes it nice, even though they're obviously a much better team than the Bengals and they're playing at home. It would have been devastating to lose this game. So they won't have much time, though, you know, to turn it around. Just a couple days away, Thursday night, they're going to be playing the Bears. They'll do it at Lambeau Field. We'll be back with a podcast. We'll tell you all about it, but probably about a week from now. We'll let this one sit and digest for a while. But we'll have another episode of Packers Therapy. But until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy. Wait. Dave, one more thing before we say goodbye. I meant to get to our correspondence that we get every week from people, either PackersTherapy@yahoo.com or email address or at PackersTherapy on Twitter. And it's important we do it this week because we received a gift, a contribution in our PayPal account from our good buddy Richard Durain. And he sent us some money, and he said that this is a future payment for helping my wife fall asleep this football season while I listen to your podcast at night. She literally says, quote, put some podcast on that I don't care about so I fall asleep. So there's that. So we are happy, Mrs. Durain, to be able to lull you to sleep with our juvenile humor.
Yeah.
Thank you, Richard. And you've also been terrific in corresponding with us on Twitter at Packers Therapy as well. So we would be remiss if we didn't thank you for going to PayPal, PackersTherapy@yahoo.com. And you can support the podcast there like our good friend Richard Durain did. Also, a lengthy email and a thorough email from our very favorite domestic mailman, not to be confused with mailmen, say, in Norway who listen to us, like Harold. This is from Andy. And he wrote what I think would be a tremendous post to his blog about the last Packers game. Absolutely terrific analysis. Andy, for a guy who delivers the mail, you are one fine writer, sir. So thank you for being in touch with that. We do greatly appreciate it. Also checking in this week with us via Twitter, Jason Peroni, Scott Nyer, once again, in touch with us. Patrick checking in from Ireland. We appreciate that. Doug Green, Rob Gardner, once again, we appreciate that. Did you see the picture we got from Guy in the UK, one of our longtime Packers Therapy listeners, along with his son Stephen? They had the game over in UK, and our very own team physician, Dr. Klaus, arm in arm with Guy over in the UK before the game there. And I got to say, Dr. Klaus, you are looking very healthy, my friend. I'm delighted to see that. So thank you one and all for being in touch with us via email, and also especially via Twitter, because my concentration usually doesn't extend more than 140 characters. So we wanted to make sure we acknowledge that before we go off into the night.
You know, 302 shows, Chris, probably average an hour and a half a piece, probably an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes a piece. That is a ton of podcasts to fall asleep to. You could sleep for a year probably based on the amount of material that we've put out there.
It's the big sleep. It's the big sleep, Dave.
It is, yeah. That's what we should rename the podcast, The Big Sleep.
Well, that's what I'm going to do here shortly, because it's getting rather late here almost on a Monday morning. So anyway, we're going to be back. We're going to do it again. Chris and Dave will be back in a week with more Packers Therapy.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.